Welcome everyone to another episode of the Let's Talk Surgery podcast for RCSED. I am Gregory Cotta, colorectal registrar from Edinburgh. And today we have another episode of the Careers Fair. And join us today as joint hosts of the podcast, we've got Sadie and Ceci. It's a trio for a change. Sadie, how are you?
I'm fine. Quite excited. Life being an orthopod.
I know. Interesting. The pre-meet, we heard about the thick skin. We're going to explore that, aren't we? Ceci, how are you doing? Welcome back.
I'm okay. Thank you very much for the snazzy and jazzy introduction, but excited to get into it.
Excellent. And today we are joined by two orthopedic surgeons and one budding orthopedic surgeon to talk all things orthopedics and the journey from, I was going to say cradle to grave, but that's a bit unfair for Sanjay. So I'm just going to say from start to consultanthood. With us today, we've got Sanjay. Sanjay, how are you doing? We'll get you to introduce yourself for our audience.
Hi there, my name's Sanjay. I'm a knee surgeon at Stockport in Manchester. Been a consultant for far too many years now, and especially interested in sports injuries of the knee.
Welcome to the podcast. Haroon is going to be familiar to a lot of our audience and members of the College of Edinburgh. So Haroon, we'll get you to introduce yourself.
Hi guys, I'm Haroon Raymond. I'm an orthopedics ST8, soon to finish in August in CCT, at which point I'll be going on to be an arthroplasty fellow at Writington Hospital. My college involvement is that I am chair of the trainees committee, and I am also a member of council of the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh.
Welcome. And finally, we've got Dylan, who's our medical student / junior doctor representative on the podcast. Dylan, how are you?
Hello. My name's Dylan. I'm one of the FY1 trainees in Sheffield. I'm currently working in Sheffield Children's Hospital in paediatric medicine. Fingers crossed, I get into orthopedics one day.
Very good. If you don't get into orthopedics, there's another fantastic specialty called colorectal surgery, and someday I might be able to.
Oh. Paediatric surgery. Just step over from medicine to surgery. It's not hard. Just do that.
Here we go. Ceci, your time will come. I've got the mic, so steady on. Right. So welcome everyone to the podcast. Sadie, I'll hand over to you to grill Sanjay. Just before you do, actually, Sadie, if I may. Sanjay, you're clearly a consultant surgeon in Manchester, and we'll come a bit more detail to you. But just one quick question, red or blue?
Manchester or Liverpool? I'm a Liverpool red. That way down the motorway.
Oh, Liverpool. Controversial. Ouch. Anyway, Sadie, back to you.
Flummoxed Greg there a little bit there. So let's start. Sanjay, so let's talk about orthopaedic careers. And how have you got to where you are today, being an orthopaedic consultant in a busy DJH?
So it's really funny because I think nowadays people are kind of forced to make a career choice fairly early. I didn't really have that. So I went into my surgical training not wanting to do orthopaedics at all, because I'd done my house jobs with the transplant unit at Manchester Royal Infirmary, and I thought I quite enjoyed that. It was quite good fun. So I wanted to do something general surgical, and I started my basic surgical training. This is before run-through existed. So we did house jobs for 1 year and then 2 years basic surgical training, and then you'd apply for senior SHO jobs and registrar jobs after that. So after my house jobs, I did my basic surgical training, a two-year rotation at Bolton. And one of my first attachments was in orthopedics. And it's ironic how you get inspired by people you meet early in your career. And I worked for a knee consultant, and I watched him do an anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction for a footballer. And I just sat back and thought, you know what, that's a really good operation. From then it started. So they just developed an interest in orthopedics. And then after my 2 years surgical training, did an extra 12 months as a senior SHO, and then got into a registrar training program. So it's just the equivalent of run through, but it was kind of you'd applied at each level back then. Then I just always wanted then to do knee surgery, and that's what I've kind of ended up doing, and I'm still really enjoying it.
And when you say you always wanted to do knee surgery, is that you decided early on, or what's the pathway for orthopods these days? Do you do a full everything?
You do. There's generic trend. The curriculum's just about to change in the UK. So from August, it's become very different. Up till now, it's been very competence-based. So you've got to do X number of joint replacements, X number of these operations, and it's becoming much more pillar base, so like the GMC guidance. So it's much more kind of an overall day one consultant safety level you're aiming for. So it is changing, but it's essentially a 5-year program. Once you've hit all your competencies, you've got to do, you know, hands, knees, hips, pediatrics. Once you've done all those and you've passed the exam, you can then start tailoring your jobs left into this specialist area you need. And pretty much nowadays, everyone will do a good fellowship, either a national, a local one, a national one, or an international one. And that's really where you kind of hone your skills.
Okay. And is that what you did and settled in Stockport?
Yeah. So I was SHO in Stockport many, many years ago. I was a senior SHO, and then I came back as a registrar, and I did the BASC approved, which is the British Thea Surgeon Society approved fellowship. And then you do lots of visiting fellowships, which is always a good thing to do, spend a little bit of time out of your area, out of the country. So I spent a bit of time in Sydney, some visiting fellowships in France and other parts of Europe. And you bring all those back to you. So it's a good time to spend a bit of extra time gaining all that experience, I think.
And what's life like at the moment, day to day for yourself?
So it's pretty busy. I mean, we work in quite a busy hospital. So, you know, each morning there's the whole unit will keep running over. You're in there for certain days in the week. There's in the morning, we all come in at 8. We all do our ward rounds of our patients. Then at 8:30, we all meet in the trauma room, and the team that will be on call come along after doing their rounds. And we go through every admission that's come in via the on-call with the entire team around us. So we've got all the registrars, all the CTs, all the F1s and F2s. They're all there. And it's a great learning time. So we go through each x-ray. We offer more medical students, ask them a couple of questions. The more senior registrars who are peri-exam get the more difficult questions, peri-exam questions. And it's a great learning opportunity. Half an hour every morning, it's good fun. You get to know everyone. You get to know every patient that's coming in. You plan the trauma list. So even if we're not the trauma list, I'll go from the trauma meeting to my clinic or to my elective list after that.
I'm not sure it's good fun for the guy who's being questioned in your trauma clinic.
Oh, it's great fun.
And is it quite straightforward questions, shall I say?
It's very lighthearted. They start straightforward. But for the guys who are peri-exam, they actually find it very useful because for those guys, it's very basic initially, but for the guys who are doing the exam, we make sure we ask them questions they're going to get in the exam. We kind of teach them how to answer, because a lot of the exam passing it now, it's not so much what you know, it's your technique of delivering the answer or delivering the solution. So a lot of that technique just comes from practice, as everything does. So it's a good opportunity for everyone.
And as a consultant, as you know, you'll have 7% of your work is clinical. What's other things that you do? Do you do management? Do you do research or training and teaching?
I have do a lot of training and teaching, and I do a lot of research. So I'm an honorary lecturer at the University of Manchester, where we do a lot of basic science research. We've got a couple of PhD students there looking at cellular mechanisms and tissue engineering. So with knee surgery, one of my interests is cartilage regeneration and ligament reconstructions. So we've got a great set of professors there. We meet regularly. We publish regularly from that. So when I do a knee replacement, for example, the sample, when I've cut the knee and we've put the knee implant in, the sample we've cut out, they go into a pot and a student comes along from Manchester, picks it up, and they look for cell markers, and we've done a fair bit of work on that over the years. So that's the basic science research. Then biomechanical research. I'm an honorary lecturer at University of Salford, where they've got all the 3D gate labs and testing machines. So you've got a really good mix of biomechanical research as well as basic science research to do as well. So the opportunities are very widespread. So we're involved in that a lot. And a lot of teaching and training. I'm a member of the Senior Specialist Training Committee of Orthopaedics. I'm an STC lead at Stepping Hill. So we attend a lot of the meetings and we're involved in the RCP process. And, you know, teaching juniors and registrars coming through is fantastic because we're getting to the stage now, we're seeing some of our foundation doctors come through as consultant colleagues now, which is just fantastic to see.
And, you know, looking back, I mean, as you say, once you had that desire to do orthopaedics, it seemed to be you were pretty focused in that. Looking back now, somebody starting out like Dylan, what kind of advice would you give him?
I think you've got to maintain that keenness. I think that's probably the most important thing. It's very easy to be quite passive, I think, when you're a medical student, and it's passive on both fronts. So it's our responsibility to make it as interesting as we can for a medical student. And I think it's good for them to also get involved as well. So we've seen some medical students over the years who are just brilliant. They're there all the time. They're coming in, they're getting scrubbed. And we'll let them put a couple of screws in a case and do a bit of the operating as well under supervision. So it's just about maintaining that interest. And I think it's really key. If you look at who's going to kind of inspire you, you've got to get that early on in your career. I think it doesn't come later on so much. It's that early few years quite formative.
And, you know, is it as simple as DIY?
Oh, it's much more complex. It's much more complex. No, I think the interesting, it's incredibly varied. I think that's what attracts me to it. And, you know, you've got any operation, because my elective practice is just knee surgery. But even within knee surgery, it can be kneecap dislocations, ligament reconstructions, knee replacements, cartilage regeneration, meniscal repair. There's a whole spectrum of treatment options. And trauma-wise, you know, it can be anything. You do a weekend on call. So it is incredibly widespread. And if you like using kit, it's fantastic. All of your instruments used. And, you know, people generally get better with all the operations and they get better pretty quickly. So you've not got to have this 3-year follow-up waiting for something to work. It's pretty instant. Generally, you've got a low complication rate. You very rarely are up all night doing any operations unless it's life or limb threatening. So you generally get a good night's sleep. And it's an incredibly rewarding job. And certainly in my practice, it's a combi. I see kids from the age of, you know, 4 or 5 up to, I saw somebody this week, it was 94 for a knee replacement. So it's a massive spread of patients that you see. And that's what keeps it interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, as you're saying, you have trauma lists, isn't it? Seven days a week. And would you have to be, as a consultant, I expect to be in on the weekends in your trauma list?
Yes. So we are lucky that we do a weekend. There are quite a few consultants at Stepping Hill. So we probably do a week, three weekends a year. So it's not a huge undertaking, but you are expected. There is a trauma list all day on Saturday and on Sunday. And you're in there all day.
What do you think is changing? I mean, even as consultants, don't we? We see change in practices. And what new changes are you seeing going forward?
We've been quite lucky at Stepping Hill. It's always been fairly subspecialist. There's still some units where there's very much this, you know, the general orthopedic surgeon who does hip replacements, knee replacements, a bit of shoulder work, a bit of hand work. That's kind of not been the way we've developed at Stepping Hill. So, you know, we've always been, we have 4 knee surgeons, we have 4 hip surgeons, we've got 3-4 spine surgeons, 3-4 shoulder surgeons. It's very, very subspecialist. And if you work in a good unit, it works really well, because if I get a complex elbow fracture, I'll do the first aid bit, and then on the Monday, the elbow guys will come in and look after that patient, and vice versa for a complex knee work. So the patient gets a really good deal at the end of it. So I think that's probably been one of the biggest changes maybe over the last 10 or 15 years.
That's really quite nice, isn't it? Teamwork, because as always, you want to get the patient to the best person for the job, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's much better that you go to some, it's better that one person does 50 of these cases than 50 people do one case a year. So it's a big movement from GERFT, so getting it right first time, which was led by Tim Briggs, one of the orthopedic surgeons down in Stanmore. And it's really about looking at every aspect of all surgical specialities, about, you know, just manoeuvring the right teams into the right places so there isn't unnecessary expense and the people might surgery the first time around.
Well, Greg, you know, it sounds like orthopedics should have been the choice you should have taken.
No, absolutely not. I have full respect for what they do, but I think the final point you make there, Sanjay, is a good one. It's about fitting the system around patients rather than what we sometimes do, which is trying to fit patients around our system. And that's also one of the questions I had for you around the trauma. So you're clearly a knee surgeon, but if there was a fractured hip or fractured elbow, but, you know, forearm, as during your on calls, you will deal with that. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, we're all trained in general trauma. So it's fairly, you know, fixing a hip fracture, fixing a forearm, fixing a wrist, it's all fairly bread and butter. They're the more common injuries. Obviously, if you get a very rare injury that comes in, we've had this a couple of times where it's been an emergency, but it's not something you're happy to deal with. We will just call one of our colleagues and say, come and give me a hand with this one. I've been called in to sort somebody's knee out, you know, out of hours and stuff. And if you just help each other out, it's a very nice way to work.
Sounds rather collegiate. That's great. Haroon, we'll come to you next. I guess my first question to you, Haroon, is of all the surgical specialties, why orthopedic?
Interesting you ask, Greg. I'm actually quite similar to Sanjay. I didn't start off wanting to do orthopedics. Even as late as FY1, I was committed to hepatopancreatobiliary surgery. I went to Edinburgh, and that's where I sort of started my journey in orthopedics. I saw some really high caliber orthopedic surgeons doing what they do. And the more important thing for me was what was going on with the patients. So I worked in both general surgery and orthopedics. And I noticed that patients undergoing HPB surgery, they'd be sick. They'd get some really high class surgery done, like that take ages, very intricate stuff. And then they'd come back to the ward, but they would sort of stay sick and sometimes get sicker. They'd be rushed back and forth to the CT scanner, and eventually they'd perish. Now, that was my personal experience of it. I'm sure that's not the general experience, but it was pretty miserable. And I'd say probably part of one of the most depressing parts of my career so far. But then the flip side of that was orthopedics, where people would come in broken and you'd fix them doing an operation, doing 45 minutes an hour. And the next day they'd be up on their feet. walking, and just really happy for it and being rehabilitated. So there's a lot of job satisfaction in the patient group. And that was sort of what initially attracted to me. And then when I started looking into it, I agree, it's very varied. You know, trauma is extremely general, so you get to do all sorts of things in trauma. And then elective practice is also very satisfying. So I sort of rushed to change my CV so I could apply for the run-through post. And I was just very lucky to get into run-through orthopedic training in Scotland, which at the time was sort of the holy grail of orthopedic training in my mind.
Yeah, so I think that's very insightful of you sharing that. And I'm going to let a secret out here. You and I would have applied for run-through training around the same time. And at that time, I was considering orthopedics. So unlike you, I started off wanting to do orthopedics. Having started off wanting to be an oncologist, and then I was inspired by some orthopedic surgeons in Glasgow. But then I found colorectal surgery and never looked back. So passing chips, I guess. It's interesting what you talk about in terms of, you know, one of your drivers was watching your patients get better. And I think that's a key point. Sandy touched on it earlier, the work-life balance bit. We've heard it from a consultant's point of view, but from a registrar's point of view, what's that like?
I think it's variable, probably based on a deanery basis. It even depends on what you're doing at the time. Our trauma here is a separate hospital. It's done in the MTC in Aberdeen, whereas our elective is also done in a sort of elective hospital. So if you're an elective, it's quite nice and controlled. It's a good work-life balance. You can get to the gym and meet your friends. Whereas if you're in trauma in the winter, it's completely brutal. And you just have to accept those 6 months are probably going to be a write-off of your life. They come up, you know, you probably do half your training. So 4 years of it are going to be quite intense in trauma. But if you do it, you become a really good surgeon. Your trauma decision-making and your trauma surgical skills are bulletproof, and you can happily put your hand to anything.
Because the rest of us just go through, or I mean, pediatrics, I guess, would be slightly different. But you guys are very, particularly emergency workers, is very dependent on the season. And I guess the follow-up questions around COVID. Now, you know, at the time of this recording, COVID is still with us, and so we've got to talk about it. What has it been like, both electively and emergency operating in orthopedics?
Elective's been rubbish, mate. So most elective practice around the country was suspended through COVID, and we're just really recovering it here locally now. I was lucky my TPD had the foresight to put senior trainees into trauma so they would maintain their skills, accepting that junior trainees might be redeployed or sort of their training may suffer for a period, but they can recover it later in the program. So I spent most of COVID in trauma, and trauma really didn't stop at all. That sort of keeps your skills up to date. Arguably, trauma pushes you a little bit more than elective because you're forced to deal with sort of weird and wonderful things. And I'd say it enhances your elective practice when you finally get back to it. So I'm just sort of recovering elective training now, really, in the last 4 months or so. I've just sort of started doing hips and knees again, but we're getting there.
Yeah. So I guess you never got into pruning patients, did you?
Unfortunately not. I didn't get that far.
That's fine. We'll just take it back to the curious bit of this then. You know, you talked about your routine being run through training. Obviously, in your position as chair of the training committee, you'll have a bit more insight into the different routes that one can take. So for Dylan starting off as an FY1, what are his potential routes into orthopedic training?
Okay. Well, this is good because this information is essentially you can go into orthopedic training at different stages. There are run-through programs available in Scotland, but those jobs are very limited and extremely competitive. You have anywhere between 12 and 16 jobs a year, and there are many hundreds. I couldn't tell you the exact competition ratio applying for them. That is a job you can start straight after FY2. It's an 8-year program. And you really have to have a solid CV to apply for that because you get some real sharp individuals going for that job. There's a few things we'll talk about that will enhance your CV. The other route, which is the probably more common route, you know, 12 jobs versus all the other hundreds of orthopedic jobs that come up, is that you do core training and then you apply at ST3 level. With that route, I think you would be able to take some time out and do out of program training. As much as I disagree with it, if you're applying for run-through training and you take time out, you do lose points on the application for that. So it's something you sort of have to consider quite early on. I think you have to plan. First of all, you've got to accept that you want to do it. So you just have to be open-minded and decide, I want to be an orthopedic surgeon. Then you've got to be motivated. And then you've got to sort of plan your route into it. Where am I going to come into the specialty? Do I want to start as an ST1 and only do orthopedics for the rest of my days? There's something to be said about doing a mixed core training program and learning other skills, plastic skills, handling other soft tissues. So do you want to do that first and then apply as an ST3? But the stuff that you have to do for both is fairly general and similar. You just maybe have to be a wee bit more intense and timely if you're applying for the run-through program. I would say there's also run-through programs available in England. I can talk a little bit about the sort of things you should be doing and going for at this stage. So I was just looking at my CV when I was in FY2 to see what sort of stuff I'd done to apply for this program. The first thing is go for things that are not so obvious, because everyone's going to tick the obvious boxes, and you should have ticked the obvious boxes as well. So things like the white space answers where they want to see commitment to specialty. You want to show that you've been going to trauma meetings, M&Ms, MDTs. You've been throwing yourself at these sort of obscure courses and conferences, okay? But in a sort of more organized fashion, at undergraduate level, you want to do well at medical school, pick up prizes if you can. They don't have to be the brainiest cardiology guy, but any type of prize or bursary counts. What it means to be an orthopedic surgeon, their on calls, their trauma commitments, their elective commitments, their sort of professional activities out with the clinical practice. You should work on professional development. So do as many surgical courses as you can, but do try to focus on some orthopedic surgical courses as well. So there's sort of orthopedic skills for undergraduates, orthopedic skills for junior doctors. Try and get them on your CV. They cost a little bit, but you learn a lot, you have fun, you network, and you get points on your CV. Try, and you know, shamelessly, I'll plug the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh. They offer quite a lot of these courses. Just keep an eye out for them. And then, yeah, academic skills courses, you can do that at undergraduate level. Academia is actually important to all surgical applications for a variety of reasons. It doesn't mean you're going to be an academic, but they want to see that you're able to conduct research and reproduce things. So you don't have to become a professor, but you do have to sort of show some interest. With that comes things like international, national, local presentations. And never forget about presenting at things like trauma meetings. If you show that you're trying to learn the professional skills that orthopedic registrars have at a very junior stage, that comes across really, really well. I was presenting all these cases at the trauma meeting. I was sort of going to the morbidity mortality meeting and putting presentations and audits forward. That takes us on to audit nicely. So do audits. Audits you get most points for if you close the loop. So there's no point doing one cycle, making no change, not having a standard, and then just leaving it there. You'll get nothing, and it's actually a waste of your time. Plan it. I want to do an audit. I want to make a change, and I want to enhance the department. Get involved in these governance activities early on. It's hard as a medical student because you sort of end up feeling like a bit of an imposter, or even as a junior doctor, you feel like a bit of an imposter. I certainly did when I was teaching people stuff. But don't just learn it and teach it. You know, make it interesting for people. Learn it, understand it, and then make an interesting presentation for people. And if you can, get that signed off with some sort of workplace assessment or even just a letter from a consultant. Have decent professional affiliations. So join BOTA, join things like the Royal College of Surgeons as an affiliate, and show that, you know, you're interested and you're throwing yourself at it. There are perks to that beyond just having it as on your CV. You do get to network with people, meet people and do things. And then, yeah, just focus on other transferable skills as well. Things that, you know, technology is a big thing in orthopedics at the moment. We've got robots coming in. Innovations are bringing else to the table. You know, I can write code or something, or I've written an app that lets you see what type of a fracture you're dealing with. There's something weird that always goes down well. I've spoken for a while, Greg.
No, that's been very comprehensive, but not just orthopedic specific advice, and that if we change the subject matter to anything else, I think a lot of the advice you had there would fit. And so I let you have the floor for that long because I thought that was critical advice for anybody thinking of going, and you know, there's a lot to unpick in there, but for the, in the interest of time, I wouldn't do that. I guess specific points to make was just around the two ways to go in, and I think you've talked about the direct and indirect, and I wonder if there is an element of those who are not really sure whether orthopedics is for them or not, go down the core training route and then take from there. Yeah,
just develop general skills. Yeah, just develop general skills. Your publications don't have to be in orthopedics. You just have to show you can go through the process. I'm going to embarrassingly admit that my publication, I had zero orthopedic, if you want to laugh, and a lot of single port laparoscopic surgery stuff. I did a lot on that, but nothing in orthopedics.
Greg, can I just say one little thing on that? I think that all that advice is absolutely brilliant. It's very comprehensive, and I agree with all of those comments that Harun has just done. I think when you are applying, I think one of the best bits of advice I was told was to just take a look at your CV early on. And it's really good to have all of these, you know, other bits going on, orthopedics and courses and all the rest of it. But also don't forget the home bits as well. The stuff outside of work is probably as important early on in your career to show that you aren't just doing orthopedics. You're in a team doing rowing, or you're in a running club, or just something different that just shows you've got a good balance early on. I think that that aspect of it is really important early on. You want to see someone who's a well-balanced person rather than just purely academic.
100% agree, 100% agree. Plan your entry into it and enjoy the journey. Don't give up your sports. If you're doing something, if you plan it correctly, you'll have a lot of fun doing all this stuff and you'll live your life. Yeah, I completely agree with that, Sanjay. Thanks.
And then just a couple more points to unpick, Harun, with you. So, you know, you've touched on some of that already in terms of research requirements. So is academia in orthopedic training becoming more and more essential in a sense, i.e. taking time out to do a PhD or an MD? And linked in with that, you've also talked about the technological advances. And I think orthopedics is one of those specialties where there is a very strong link between the specialty and industry. And how does that play out for a registrar? Because I think that's one thing that might appeal to certain individuals to think, you know, if I go down this pathway, I will have strong links with industry.
Yeah, it's all good. So research, yes, research is important. You don't have to be doing higher level degrees and things to get into it. You don't have to come out with a higher level degree. It certainly helps for certain types of jobs. There are certain centers that are research strong, but you know, if you wanted to work, you know, in some of the centers that I've worked in and around Scotland, it's not so important because, you know, you need a mix of people. It's just the skills. You just have to have demonstrated that you've picked up the skills. You don't need the academic currency unless you want to be an academic or work in a strong academic unit. The industry bit's interesting. So I would say that industry, yeah, orthopedics is looked on in a bad light for that. But actually, industry is a good thing for orthopedics and it's a good thing for training. The amount that we get through surgical reps, courses that we get put on, things we get taught to do, it's really invaluable to the training program. It's not like the old days. I mean, I used to hear these funny stories about surgical reps buying consultants' cars and watches and all that. It's not like that. These guys come, they have to argue. There's evidence behind what they're presenting. There's, you know, joint registries. There's evidence behind all of the implants. And it's really heavily scrutinized. So it's not that they just come in, bribe you, and then you use their stuff. They have to prove themselves to you, and then they make opportunities for you if you want them in training terms. So robots is a good example of that. There's a lot of money that goes into training surgeons to use robots. So they would use them. But then robots, I think they do enhance our practice in some areas. How do you find them in knee surgery, Sanjay? Not that I want to turn this into a robot beast.
Please do. I'm pro-robot, so let's talk robots.
I think at the minute, it's still very much an experimental device to use. Yes, there's no doubt it improves accuracy with knee replacements and partial knee replacements. There's still very limited evidence there's clinical benefit, but that's going to come with time. You know, the traditional methods of putting a knee replacement are very kind of, you know, it's very a systematic approach. You go through these steps. So I think with a robot, you can certainly be more accurate. And we just need to do properly conducted clinical trials to see whether that equates to a better outcome. Because at the minute, it's £1 million for a robot. And all the extra bits that paraphernalia go with that. So you've got to really, yeah, particularly with the NHS as it is, you've got to make sure it's cost effective.
Do you have one?
We almost had one. We had a load of discussions when the tender came up and it was blocked down. But it's a good trial that's just been set up in Coventry.
Oh, right.
Look, a randomised trial for robotic knee replacement versus standard knee replacement. So those are the kind of trials that you need to do.
Yeah.
And just going back to that comment about research and training, so the trainees we have in the Northwest in the UK, you have to produce two PubMed papers during your training. And it's not to make somebody academic. It's just that it is quite generic stuff. And I think it's important that trainees going through that process, if they've written a paper, they will read a paper much better. And you'll be basing your decision, evidence-based decisions. You've got to be able to interpret a clinical thing properly. So you get a whole load of skills from doing an extra degree or publishing a couple of papers, even though you don't want to be academic. There's a whole set of skills, such as keeping to time, you know, that little things like that, and keeping to a deadline that you learn from doing those kind of things.
Yeah, all that's really great advice. And you guys will have to come back at some other time and we'll do a whole episode on robotics because it is exciting stuff. So now, Dylan, if you've, of course, listened to what these guys have had to say and being an F1, you've been through medical school and have met so many different people. So I've got two questions for you. With all that, why surgery? And the second question, with everything you've heard, what does it make you think about a career in orthopedics? Does it make you excited? Do you have any particular questions? I'm just interested to hear your thoughts.
Getting into surgery and trying to do all the right things, say all the right things, I feel like it will scare the medical students who are listening to this thinking, oh my God, I need to ditch all my social life, my hobbies, to tick all these boxes, to get publications, go on the courses. I think the way I looked at it was do what you're interested in, do what you find interesting, exciting, and you'll end up in the right specialty at the end of it. You might be thinking, like from what Sanjay, Haroon, even Greg said, like they both thought of different specialties when they first started their careers and ended up in their respective specialties. Even me, I initially, when I started, I wanted to be a neurosurgeon, diehard neurosurgeon. Patients that end up at your door in surgery, they have a surgical fix and they're not going to end up with, like in medicine, where we don't know what's going on. It could be functional problems. It could be a social problem going on and you've got to deal with it holistically. In surgery, a lot of the patients have a surgical problem, which has a surgical fix, and then you fix it and then you can move them on. And I like the mix, the variety you get in surgery, where you get your ward round, you get your clinics, and you also get your operating theatre time, which is all quite different. Whereas in medicine, your whole time is usually spent in a ward round. You might have your one or two specialist skills that you might do, like bronchoscopy or something, but most of your work's ward round. Whereas in surgery, you get the whole variety of different things. So that's what interested me in surgery initially. So and then, like say, through med school, I've just been doing things. And like Sanjay said, what I found good about orthopedics is everyone's quite happy. And it's because we all have our hobbies and interests, which we bring together. And we don't just all just talk about surgery. Whereas in neurosurgery, I found, because it's very competitive, all people had to talk about was neurosurgery. Whereas orthopedics, because there's a lot more jobs in orthopedics, because you've got departments in district generals, in teaching hospitals. So people are a lot friendlier, more teamwork going on. Whereas certain specialties like pediatric surgery, neurosurgery, the jobs are only in teaching hospitals. And then again, there's very few jobs and there's a lot more competition for these jobs. So I found that in neurosurgery at the moment, there's not enough consultant jobs. And there's a lot of senior registrars waiting for the consultant jobs. And this is one of the reasons why I got put off neurosurgery, thinking, you know what, in orthopaedic surgery, if I want a job in, let's say, South Yorkshire, there's departments in Sheffield, there's department in Barnsley, Rotherham, I can stay in the local area. Whereas somewhere like neurosurgery, paediatric surgery, there's only departments within one department within a region. And chances are later on in my career, I might have to be moved for a consultant job. And if I've got a family, do I really want to be moving my entire family to a different part of the country just for a consultant job? So there's a lot of things I've been thinking about when it came to thinking about, right, what should I do? And there's a lot of pressure on us as well, like you say, so early on to be like, what do you want to do? Do you want to do neurosurgery? Do you want to do orthopedics? Run through, like neurosurgery's run through. I think it's a good idea to do core training and get like the general skills. Like, because thing is, we might do core training, I might do core training and do a rotation in vascular surgery or plastic surgery and realize, oh, actually, I quite like this. I enjoy this. I like the team I'm working with. Specialties like until you've actually worked in it. And like, as a student, how much exposure do you get in all the different specialties? Very little. Whereas like orthopedics, I didn't get any exposure to orthopedics until my final year when I did 3 weeks in orthopedics. And that's when I thought, oh, actually, I quite like this. But before that, my 5 years were spent just spending time in neurosurgery.
It's really interesting getting your perspective on it. And I think these are wise words. Being flexible, being malleable, and being curious is very important, certainly at your stage. And I think you've really touched on very key points. I think you're very mature to consider workforce planning as well, because that's something that's really important when you're planning a career, unlike sort of slightly insane people like myself who have moved so many times and will probably have to move for a consultant job. But we won't talk about that. Enough about me.
I just have one question. I know we've got an audience of boys today, so I just wanted to cover the subject matter of flexible training in orthopedics and females in there. When I look, there seems to be a better and better representations. What's your understanding, Sanjay, and advice, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Get stuck in. There's no reason to have the low numbers that we have. It is improving over the years. It's slowly going up. You know, I've got three daughters, so it's a very strong belief of mine that there should be equal opportunities, and that's that. And people can then make choices. And I still think that it's a very male orientated specialty. It's absolutely not. You know, we've got some brilliant female orthopedic surgeons around, so they are helping pave the way, kind of going forward for females coming in. But you know, flexible training, absolutely fully support female training. We've got my trainee currently. She's a 60% LTFT trainee. She's pregnant and she's absolutely superb. So there are mechanisms in place. Your training program director will support it. You'll get the correct training at the pace you need it. And it should be fully supported and promoted at every level.
Yeah. And Haroon, what's your experience?
Yeah, completely possible and very important, actually. You know, it's a team sport, takes all sorts. You only have to look at all the small, slim men that do it to understand that you don't have to be a big rugby orthopod guy to get through. So everyone should do it. Everyone should consider it. There's no barriers in this specialty. Everyone's friendly. And, you know, if you're an FY going through that, I think you'd see that. I think the problem with orthopedics, this is a fear of the unknown. People take a lot of information on without really ever experiencing the specialty themselves. Just keep an open mind. Go to an orthopedics unit. Tell them you're interested and you will be embraced. We've got five female trainees here, all excellent, all absolutely excellent. So it's possible, and I think more people should do it.
Thank you, Ceci, for letting me get that question in.
Really important issue to cover, and I'm glad to see that the face of surgery is changing. There is no stereotype that fits today's surgeons, so that is absolutely fantastic. So to finish, I will start with you, Sanjay. One little question. What is the collective term for a group of orthopods? A hammer of orthopods? A pack of nails or screws of orthopods?
Oh, crikey, I like the idea of a hammer of orthopods. Sounds fantastic. Collection of orthopods. An intellect of orthopods. There you go. There's going against all stereotypes.
Oh, wow. Okay, fantastic. I think that's one for the history books. In the whole world, if you could scrap all the other ones and just pick one to do for all time, what would you pick?
Total hip replacement got the second highest patient satisfaction outcomes of all operations done by humans on humans. So it's one of the most effective operations ever. Can anyone guess what the first one was? I know Sanjay will know.
It's not tonsillectomy.
It's cataracts. People would rather see before they walk, which makes sense. So total hip replacement all the way.
Fantastic. I can see a budding hip surgeon in the mix. I don't know if I'm right or wrong about that.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, well, there you go. Dylan, the best thing about orthopedics is dot, dot, dot. And don't say hammer, 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 nail, nail, nail. I'm going to keep doing that, by the way. Sorry, guys.
The best thing about orthopedics, I think it's the teamwork. And I find really exciting when I've been to 50 million trauma calls. But I love the teamwork camaraderie that you get when you're at a trauma call with all the different specialties there. And that's what I think the best thing about orthopedics is. I'd like to give one advice for medical students. But one thing, one of the professors of the PS orthopedics firm, Great Ormond Street, told me last week in a talk, put a little more in, get a lot more out. So if you show that you're keen and like you want to get involved, go and see the patient before the surgery, examine them, then the supervisor will take you under their wing. They'll get you involved in the surgery. And yeah, you'll get a lot more out of it. So that's one advice from my experience of surgery.
Well, I think that's a perfect way of ending it. Thank you so much, Dylan. Guys, our email address is still the same, comms@rcsed.ac.uk. Do drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. And until next time, stay safe, be kind to each other. A huge thank you to Sanjay, Haroon and Dylan for their time. And it's bye from me and...
Goodbye.
Bye from me as well.